My name is Sue Malik, and I'm a lifer, Unitarian all of my life, from the 40s. And today, we're just going to talk a little bit about the burial history from the 1800s. With gratitude, I use much of the material that I'm focusing on from the book, Mark Harris's book, Grave Matters. It's focused on our American history rather than international customs. And I'd like it this morning if we can reflect on how this history differs from today's customs. Families of farmers were directly involved with the burial process. They prepared their loved ones in their homes with cleansing and dressing in the home, sewn shroud. And for poor families, a sheet. The family's closeness with the care of their loved one brought home the reality of death, and their grieving was comforted in this ritual process. The parlor was usually selected because it was cooler, and it was a convenient place to receive neighbors and the visiting community, just like we visit each other at different times. A cabinet maker was paid for a simple octagonal coffin, usually made of pine, and a family member or friend stayed with the corpse until the end. Visitors were a source of comfort to the family and provided a community bond, unlike any other. The funeral service was held in the home, and interment was frequently on the farm or church property, with family and friends digging the grave. To avoid putrefaction, the body was promptly buried. And from the nursey part of me about the communicable disease fears and so forth, I'd like to point out that pathogens, or germs, the earth is well equipped to handle pathogens. Medically, embalming is not necessary. Many families recorded a death in their home Bible or the church Bible, and in the late 1800s, some counties in the East or Midwest recorded vital statistics, but each state developed their own registration system, which was mainly available after the 1900s. This was a time of family-centered focus in the burial ritual. A body was returned to the earth and soon became part of it. But with cultural and economic forces, changes to this tradition began to appear in the mid-19th century. These changes became the groundwork for the more lavish burial we have today. A more genteel code of conduct was influenced by the colonial elite, polite behavior, dictated in a manual, fashionable clothing, and fine possessions. The funeral was seen as a display of good taste. The mourner wore black crepe, and the family received gifts and gloves and rings and other presents. Neat coffins were made from polished, handsome hardwood, as the pine coffin no longer sufficed. The growing middle class worked to have that refined lifestyle, and the workman's wages provided the means. Coffins were altered and produced to be rectangular and renamed caskets. These caskets housed a precious object, and families could be encouraged to lavish their dead with these caskets. The role of the cabinet maker began to change as he offered to undertake additional services. An undertaker now, he could rent his converted home for the funeral and a parlor for the wake, and then he could transport the loved one to the cemetery for an additional price. Meaningful caretaking of a loved one shifted from the family onto the cabinet maker, now undertaker. Then the Civil War brought another change in his role. Union soldiers were dying on enemy ground in the rural South, and grieving Northern families were denied uniting with their sons after their death. Some family members or family friends might risk going down to their deaths after their dead sons, but locating them and transporting them could be difficult and expensive. At the time, only anatomists and medical researchers performed embalming. Some Christians rejected the Egyptian pagan practice and considered it mutilating the body. But undertakers saw an opportunity to serve Northern families who wanted their loved ones returned even long after their death. The undertaker then learned the practice of embalming from the army surgeons, and he gained a skill few others had. Abraham Lincoln's embalmed body was taken on a funeral train across the nation, and for everyone to view his pleasant face, and the media, of course, covered it all. At the end of the war, embalming was sold to the public. With a unique skill, which was seen as almost required, the undertaker's role again changed, and he became the funeral director we know today, and the funeral industry was born.
Service. Good morning. I have am excited to do our green burial presentation. We have been working on green burial movement for quite a few years in our little town, and we have a lot of updates to tell you. As you heard from Sue, that the transition from home-focused funerals to the funeral home was due to a lot of societal changes. We went to one event at a conservation a movement at in Ohio, and they mentioned something like, when the Depression came, people lost their houses, and so people rented out their parlor, which is kind of the branch to funeral homes, funeral parlors, we call them. And then hospitals came into being with higher tech medical offerings, and so people died more in hospitals than at home. So all these, what seemingly seems small changes, brought us today to our funeral industry, which is worth about $22 billion. So, what we're doing now is seeing a change happening again. A lot of the baby boomers, which are millions in numbers, 74, 69, something like that, depending where you read it, along with millennials, who are also more involved. You wouldn't think a 26, 40-year-old would be thinking of their death, but they are much more upfront about it and wanting to have this change. As a matter of fact, yesterday when I was looking up something, there's an app that is called We Croak, and it will, five times a day, beep you and tell you that you are going to die. So that technology is even into it, so that was quite exciting. I'm not sure I want to be reminded five times a day, but it is an important thing to remember that we all are going to die. A lot of people went to cremations. The changes are shown in cremations went from either 57%, depending on where you read, some 54, some 53, and they are changed from two decades ago when it was 27%. And a lot of people are doing it for economic reasons, and a lot of people are doing it because they feel it's a much more sustainable environmental way to leave this earth. And the desire for choices are emerging, a lot of different options. We have reef burials and space burials and cryonics and alkaline hydrolysis, recomposting and green burial are just a few of the things that are being offered to people as an alternative to traditional burial. And I'm here to talk about green burial today. And for those who are not familiar with green burial, let me emphasize what it's about. It means that you, green burial is no embalming, and you get buried in a biodegradable coffin that could be made out of pine or anything that's going to recompost itself into the earth. You can wear a shroud, or you can just wear your favorite quilt, it doesn't matter. And there's no cement vault, and it's usually in a natural setting. So that's kind of the summary of what a green burial is. It sounds familiar, doesn't it? Because Sue's historical review is very similar to what Green Burial is, and it's so it's not new. It's just been lost. And so we are here to renew it and to bring it to light. Most options that are available in the skyrocketing and the, maybe not skyrocketing because you have to use rocket fuel, but anyway, most of them are environmentally thoughtful. They want to make less of an imprint on the earth. And so there's a lot of connections between the environment and current burial practice. So our current environmental crisis is more and more relevant to all of us. We all have heard, if you don't live under a rock, you know that things are getting pretty intense as far as our environment. And our current environmental crisis is much more relevant. So we need to make the connections between the environment and our burial practices, and let me help you do that. The practice of embalming steel, wood, coffins, cement vaults, cremation, all leave a significant negative mark on our earth. Greenhouse gases and ground pollutants. Green burial, in contrast, is a much lower environmental impact. So let me give you a few examples of what happens in traditional burials in 1 year. We've heard of embalming, and that's being used. Formaldehyde is one of the components of embalming. It's a carcinogen, which is cancer-causing. There's a lot of different other toxic chemicals that go in. When it goes into your body and you're buried in it, it goes into the soil, into the water table possibly, and excess fluid from the procedure goes down the drain. We have no criteria for excess fluid when the embalming procedure is happening. Visualizing, and there's like statistics all over, but 800,000 gallons of fluid, of embalming fluid, is used in the United States, enough to fill 1.5 Olympic pools. So that's an sizable amount of toxic liquid going into our, and I know a lot of people think vaults save us from all this, but my friend at the cemetery said, mark his word, that they do not prevent leaking. Steel caskets, okay, that's 90,000 tons of steel are used to make caskets in America. All metals mined from the earth are non-renewable. So metal caskets can't be recycled. So you're putting something that's in the ground that can't be recycled. I'll give you another visual for that. The Golden Gate Bridge. You could build the Golden Gate Bridge with the amount of steel we use for metal caskets. And there's also copper and other metals that are being used at lesser percentages. Wooden caskets. Well, there's 30 million board feet of wood are used every year. And that's about 39,000 more trees that are used for making caskets. And that's equivalent to about 1,800 American homes. So we're using a lot of wood for caskets. And rare woods are being produced through some of the rainforest and other elements for a more expensive option. Then we go to cremation. While this is a better choice for our environment, it still is not the best choice. The burning bodies releases over 1 billion pounds of carbon dioxide along with other gases and heavy metals into the air. I really have a hard time with a ton of carbon. It's like I missed that in science class or chemistry class, which I never took, but it's a lot. I've looked on the internet and there's these big balloons that are telling you how much a ton is, 2,000 pounds, what's a pound of carbon dioxide. But cremation also uses fossil fuels for 2+ hours to burn a body at 1,900 degrees, so that's using fossil fuels. And in this one instance that I found, it said that the average cremation could power a house for about a month. So it kind of gives you a little bit of idea. And I learned something from a National Geographic. It's a carbon that makes up part of our human body is released in the atmosphere during the burning of a body. Then we come to concrete vaults. Most vaults are used to keep the cemetery at a level so it doesn't sink and that they can mow, which is another issue of pollutants, but we won't go there. Concrete vaults are not necessary in green burials. They are one of the main producers of carbon dioxide, and they produce a lot of greenhouse gases. And so we, again, have our 1 ton of burial vault produces 1 ton of CO2s to manufacture it and transport. So overall, it just uses a lot of energy. But most of us haven't made that connection. We are traditional in character. We like how things are going, and we didn't think about it. But I have good news. Greendale, after several years of pursuing, they will be opening a green burial section at Greendale Cemetery in our beloved Meadville, Pennsylvania. This is pretty exciting because by the spring of 2023, we hope to have a section available for buying plots. We were persistent in this endeavor. We had to educate the board members, frequently visit, bring people in, and finally they started to see that this was a good move for our environment and also for the economics of the cemetery, because traditional burials are going down. And once the cemetery is officially opened and established, then we will start pursuing funeral directors to offer a green package. Up until now, it was really hard to sell a green burial when we didn't have any place to put the person. So I'm excited about that the funeral homes will be now opening up to some green burial packages. I think Ryan Warren is the only one that has one right now. So many of us do what we can to solve the environmental problems. We buy sustainable products, we eat organic food, we contribute to organizations that are environmentally focused. We do a lot, but I don't think we've made the connection between our last choices, which is our burial. And I think if we start doing that, we're going to get closer to the dying process, which we've been removed from, and it'll empower us a little bit to play a bigger role in the last act that we have. So. Katrina Spade is a person that started the recomposting in Washington State. Basically, you go through this tube, you get some ash put on, you know, some wood chips, and in 30 days you become a cubic yard of soil. And in one of the talks that I listened to her, it's amazing, the last thing we do on earth is pollute it. And that's basically what we're doing when we get buried traditionally. So think about it. Keep updated on it. We have a sheet that will, if you want to know a little bit about what's going on at Greendale. This will be the only one in the area. Erie doesn't have one. There's a whole lot of places that don't have green burial options. And this is going to put us on the map, as they say. So thank you for listening, and keep up the green burial promotion.